Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Aquí estamos. Aquí nos quedamos y aquí ganamos. Y hoy los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome to the Dog Pod, your home for fans of your 10-2, number 9 ranked AP and coaches, number 12 of the CFP, King of the North.
King of the North.
Washington Huskies tackle football team. The Dogs brought the Apple Cup back to its rightful place in Montlake with a 51-33 win for the ages. We're going to get into that. We're going to rank where this 2022 season fits in among the great seasons of the 21st century. We're going to get into the Week 13 rankings, talk about the Husky Bowl possibilities and the Pac-12 coaching carousel. Let's put this thing. It is all in hyperspeed. Law Dog, you ready for it?
I'm ready, BT.
All right, let's start with the old Apple Cup. Saturday night, 7:30 in Pullman.
Yeah, well, the snow did not fall, fortunately, for the Washington passing game. Unfortunately for the Cougars, the Huskies hung nearly 500 passing yards on them. So, but they actually started with the ball and moved it pretty well.
Yeah.
On the opening drive, but then they got a false start and a tackle for loss, stalling the offense a little bit, and they end up settling for a field goal. It felt like it would be important, right? If we're going to be in a shootout, like, stops matter. So 3-0 Cougars early. Huskies uncharacteristically sluggish on their first possession there. Holding penalty kind of pulls them back out of field goal range, and they have to punt for the only time all night. But they're playing field position. They forced a 3-and-out to get the ball back at the Cougar 44-yard line. Penix finds Jalen Polk for a 26-yard touchdown. Huskies take the lead 7-3. Then that starts off the track meet, I would say. Then the Cougars come back with a fake punt on 4th-and-1 from their own 34. Then they convert another 4th down from the Husky 22. Cam Ward ends up running it in for the touchdown, so it's 10-7 Cougars. But no such trickery from the Huskies here. They just march down the field. Penix comes back with a 47-yard TD early in the second quarter. Roma Dunze go up 14-10. Cam Ward comes back, and he actually goes just 3 for 7 on this drive. But the three go for 74 yards, including the 34-yarder to Robert Farrell. And the Cougars get back in front now, 17-14. Takes Washington just 4 plays. So the track meet is really going crazy here. Ends with the lateral to McMillan and then the pass back to Panix, officially ruled a run.
Rushing touchdown.
But it was a touchdown all the way across the field. And it was 21-17 Huskies. Cougars get another 4th and 7 on this next drive from the Huskies 34. They were kind of in no man's land there. They end up getting it. And then they reclaim the lead with another Cam Ward TD pass to Nakia Watson. 24-21 Wazoo. Penix comes out firing again. Another deep ball to Rome, and then he finishes the drive himself with the a 2-yard run, and it was 28-24 Washington, just under 2 minutes to go here in the half. So with 29 seconds left in the half, Alex Cook draws an unnecessary roughness penalty, kind of giving the Cougs some more life. They ultimately don't have enough time to get for another real shot at the end zone. So they settled for a field goal here, but it just, that was bad. You know, you're 38 seconds left or 29 seconds left. They could have gotten off the field there. 28-27 Huskies at half.
Still felt a little tough though, like how the game started. The doink field goal off the crossbar in.
Oh, right? Yeah.
First time we don't score on an offensive possession all season, at least a field goal. And you're kind of at halftime going, is this going to be that kind of day?
Yeah, so I was going to get there. I mean, it felt like Washington should have been pulling ahead, but just didn't. They couldn't. They just couldn't end up kind of building on any kind of a lead here. So they come out of the locker room. They just need one play, right? 75 yards to McMillan on that beautiful deep corner route, right? They go up 35-27, and okay, all right, now you're up by 8. It feels like you're starting to build a little bit of a cushion. The Huskies force another punt, but then Cam Davis loses the football on the Cougar 42-yard line. At this moment, BT, I predicted Cougars are going to go down the field and score a touchdown, and then they're going to go for 2, right? And they did, but Cam Ward doesn't reach the ball over the goal line here. The ref was see it. It was he just should have like poked it over the line there.
Just switch hands. So you got to switch hands.
Huskies maintain 35-33 lead midway through the third quarter. Then they commit another turnover here. Penix with the interception in the end zone after marching all the way down. God. And that's when I was just like, you know what? Like, this is getting a little dicey at this point, right? You're up by two. You should be killing them at this point. But the defense really steps up, particularly after that one score at the beginning of the second half. They force another three and out here. Washington gets the ball back, moves down the field again. They got a 41-yarder to Polk. Rome finishes it off with the fly sweep touchdown. They're looking to go up two scores here, right? They're up eight, and Peyton Henry misses the PAT. Huskies just cannot seem to pull away. It's 41-33. They get another punt forced by the defense here early in the fourth quarter, and this time they finally turn to the run a little bit and start running off some clock. I mean, I was kind of begging them to do it. 15 plays, 94 yards. They get all the way down, and Henry makes a real short chip shot. And then they finally build that cushion with just 5 minutes left. It's 44-33. Cougars can't get it going. Jeremiah Martin with that monster bull rush sack. Yes. The Cougs end up turning it over on downs. And then Washington just running out the clock, and Telepapa gets that big hole on first down from the 40, takes it in the end zone for the exclamation point, and then ZTF adding the other exclamation point with just 38 seconds left. BT getting the sack on Ward and the faux flag plant at midfield. Huskies win the 114th Apple Cup, 51-33. What a game.
Oh, they win big. They cover. Look, this I'll just say the adjustments that were made and the second half defense performance by the Huskies was one of for the ages, really. After giving up, 27 points, and you think, hey, you're off to a track meet. I don't know if we want to be in this year. Husky D holds them to that 6 points you talk about and 126 total yards.
And the pressure. I mean, Cam Ward was slipping away from him all night. But then in the second half, they made the adjustments and said, look, just keep contained and the pocket will close in. And that's what ended up happening. And they ended up getting him to him, what, six times?
Unreal. And you think about, they only scored, Wazoo scored once on their final six possessions of the game. And you got to love these drive charts. Like, so after they had that one that we talked about, the only score that they had in the second half, 8 yard punt, 30 yard turnover on downs, 20 yard turnover on downs. I mean, just couldn't get anything going. And you think about just stopping the run this year. We'd struggled at stopping explosive run plays earlier in the season. This was a cool stat I saw. More than half of Wazoo's runs went for less than 2 yards. I mean, Thule, what an absolute beast out there. He is NFL ready. Voitanufi, he was actually second in snaps. So I thought it was between him, Fatui Tuitele, Javon Parker, studs back there. How cool for Javon Parker to get his first Husky sack as a Husky. That was awesome, man. Interesting, I think one thing, so many of us thought ZTF would come back and take over, right? But he's still, he's playing half of the snaps of the other edge.
Right.
Braylon Trice, I mean, what a man child. 15 quarterback pressures and a sack. Probably could have had a few more sacks in there. Jeremiah Martin are playing about 80 snaps a game. ZTF's about 40. So, I mean, it seems like maybe even in the bowl game, that's what we're going to see. Didn't see much of Savelle, 17 snaps. One thing I'm a little concerned about, Eddie Ulofosio, he played just 8 snaps. And so I wonder, why did that? We were expecting after last week, they're kind of easing him in, and he was such a dominant force there. Is that going to go up in the Apple Cup? And makes me worry a little bit. Like, did he play so much at CU because the game was out of hand? Did he, take a step back? Like, what happened? But I would have thought we'd see more of Eddie. Passing D in the second half was just great. I thought they held Ward. They held him to just dink and dunk, right? Just dink and dunk passes for the whole game. He averaged 6.2 yards per attempt. I think Penix was over 11 and a half. Tupitala probably had his best game as a Husky. And the secondary, still some mixed tackles, but I think you have to credit a lot of those sacks in the second half to great coverage all up by Alex Cook, Mish Powell, and Ace Turner. Really good coverage on that. Just two other quick notes on the defense. Again, just so proud of how they came out of that at locker room in the second half. MJ Ale, he was out for the Apple Cup, but coaches say he'll be back for the bowl. Danu Heimouli, suspended. And I think at least for the season, we may not see him again. I don't know.
It doesn't feel like we're going to see him again.
Yeah. But a second half defensive performance for the ages. Very pleased with how the Huskies came out.
And the second half of this game, but really the second half of this season. I mean, since ASU, they've buckled down a lot more.
That's right.
I'd say against Oregon, there was definitely, you know, it's not like we won the game with a stout defense against Oregon, but they it made a couple of key plays and it let
came up big when they needed it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd say just against Oregon State, Colorado. I mean, the defense has definitely and by the way, like we've played the tougher part of our schedule in the second half here, so. I think you got to give credit. They have definitely made some adjustments. I mean, personnel wise, they're not where they have been, 2-3 years ago. And especially at corner. So I think the fact that they're making strides and making progress and improving as the season goes on is a good sign, especially for the bowl game coming up.
Yeah. Look, all up, I'd say an amazing second half defensive performance by the Huskies and all up the entire game. Talk about that. Oh, putting up points on a road game against the number one scoring defense in the Pac-12 and one that's what, like top five, top 10 of the country of how many points that they're giving up. Like this Wazoo defense is, you know, arguably a lot of people put them up there as one of the top and statistically one of the best in the pack. And they ran right over them.
Yeah. I mean, I just sometimes don't understand all this stuff, right? I mean, watching them, you didn't get the feeling like, what is it that they do really well? I mean, they weren't really bottling up the run. Both Cam Davis and Talapapa averaged over 9 yards a carry in this game. Between the two of them, they rushed for 181 yards. You know, and Penix throwing for 485 yards, obviously. McMillan, I don't know, does he get a completion on that for another 30? But mm-hmm. And then Rome and McMillan, both going over 150 in the game, both going over 1,000 for the season. And, yeah, I mean, this was the most complete – I mean, in an offense that's been elite all season, this was the most complete performance that they put together. It just – you know, they were doing everything pretty much right except for two turnovers, you know, that obviously are going to – they're going to kill a team like Washington. If you're in a track meet situation, you can't afford to give up the ball, especially throwing picks in the end zone and all that. They were able to recover. Penix bounced back as he has before. But I mean, if we're going to talk about going to the Rose Bowl here in a few minutes, you're not going to have that same opportunity against Ohio State or Penn State. You're going to need to protect the ball better. So
you're going to have to clean that up. And I still want to give credit where it's due to this Cougar season. That name another team who has four or more losses and their only losses are to top 17 ranked teams. That's all Wazoo has.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely had, the schedule that we did not this season, right? They were at USC. They had Utah. They were at Oregon State. They had Oregon at home, which was a tough battle. And yeah, I mean, they played a tough conference schedule this year and, mm-hmm. you know, they came out on the other side. They're going to go to a bowl game. It doesn't mean they're a bad team, but I mean, you know, the Huskies did completely have their way with them. I think we need to acknowledge it.
Oh, unreal. And I think that's what I would say makes this one for the ages, because the stakes for us were so high and this wasn't, we're not going against a 3-win team. That's not, this is a Wazoo team that is, in my opinion, no question, the best unranked team in the pack. They're, you know, they're right after that, you know, Oregon State, Oregon level, but incredible way to go. Let's talk about that. We got to get into the rankings. I'm just going to give it to you for top to bottom here. As we talked about, AP and Coaches Bowl up to number 9 from number 12, Utah at 12 in both of those. Got to say that, hey, six Pac-12 teams in the top 17, number 4, USC. As we talked about, number 9, UW, number 12, Utah, 15, Oregon, 16, Oregon State, 17, UCLA. CFP poll comes out, and this is where, look, Twitter explodes. UW up just one spot to 12, and Utah up 3 spots
jumping them
to 11 after their mighty win over Colorado. I mean, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, you know, I obviously – this matters because we think if USC wins, obviously they're going to be invited to the playoff, which is going to open up a spot in the Rose Bowl. The precedent the Rose Bowl has established in the past one time has been that they've selected the next highest ranked team, not necessarily the team that finished runner up in the championship. So for Washington, a Rose Bowl berth is potentially on the line if Utah remains ranked higher than them. I do think if they end up losing this game, that'll leave them with 4 losses. I don't see the Rose Bowl, even if the rankings are close like they are now, I don't see the Rose Bowl wanting a four-loss team that's, you know, I don't see it. I think they're going to want the Huskies if the Trojans do win. However, I think I'll be the devil's advocate here. The win that Utah had over USC, they're now the only team in the country that's beaten a team that's in the top four right now.
That's so, right. That's pretty impressive. I mean,
that's a quality win that we can't match. Our win over Oregon, probably our best win of the season, takes a little bit of a hit when they lose in the Civil War to the Beavers. So I think if you're going to rationalize it, I think that's probably how the committee would distinguish. Just say Utah's win is better than the Huskies' win. And even though the resumes are pretty close, that's probably giving them a slight edge. Now, why that wasn't the case a week ago when all this information was still known to them, that's beyond me. But, I mean, and obviously I think they're just totally full of shit all the time. I mean, every time these rankings come out, there's always like arbitrary crap, you know, and sometimes it just doesn't seem like they're engaged or they know what they're doing or like they give it the amount of thought that really needs to be there. So in any case, I do think the Huskies are in a good position. They're in the top 12. I do think that Utah would most likely slip a spot behind them. And even if they don't, I think the Rose Bowl would likely take Washington. And here's another point. John Wilner made this on his podcast and in one of his articles this week. This is going to be the last Rose Bowl of Pac-12 versus Big Ten, because next year it's going to be a CFP semifinal, and then we're expanding.
That's right. And today they accepted, right? So,
and today they came out and said we're gonna change with the times. I mean, you know, they had a gun to their head, but I mean, there's a reason that there hasn't been a college football playoff in, you know, the last 20 plus years when we all knew that that was the best thing for the sport. And it's the Rose Bowl. I mean, the Rose Bowl is the main culprit and the reason that that has not happened. So they have finally been dragged across the finish line to participate in the CFP as expansion occurs. But this will be their last chance to have their traditional Pac-10, Pac-12, Big Ten matchup. I just get the feeling that they're going to want Washington. I have a gut feeling about it. I know Utah fans are going to go crazy, but they think that they deserve it. But, you know, win your game on Saturday or Friday and you can go.
And you absolutely deserve it if, you know, win the game. And I would say it also probably depends on how it turns out. You know, if this is a 12, 14, 17 point shellacking, you know, that I think that bodes a little bit differently where they could say, hey, this is an anomaly and here we are, you know, neutral field. So we're talking about these bowl games. Let's talk about that. I mean, Roses, I think we're in a decent shot depending on what happens with Utah and USC. Others, there's outside talk that you'd be selected to a Cotton Bowl, though I do think with us coming up at number 12 in the CFP, a lot of crazy stuff would have to happen for us to get picked there. And then the next most logical place is probably an Alamo Bowl.
Yeah, and Tulane is, I think, favored to win the, the AAC and
right.
And as the top-ranked Group of Five team, which they currently are and would be, and whoever wins that game probably is going to be. I think they're playing Cincinnati, if I'm not mistaken. They're going to get an automatic berth into the New Year's Six. So we're going to have to be in the top 11 to technically qualify for the New Year's Six. And again, those bowls are not necessarily under an obligation to select us. I think in 2017 we were at large. I think we were maybe like ninth mm-hmm. or so. We were kind of in the top 10, a little bit more cushion than we have right now. I think it's Rose Bowl or bust if you're a Husky fan right now and you need USC to win and make the playoff for that to be a sure thing. And even then, it won't be a sure thing until the Rose Bowl does their thing on Sunday and announces the matchup. But I just have a feeling they're going to want Washington, a team that's been there, you know, a dozen times.
Wasn't there last year.
Wasn't there just a year ago. Did play Ohio State 4 years ago. They probably don't love their choices here. I'm sure the Rose Bowl would rather have USC in that semifinal against Michigan, you know, this year, but that's just not how the calendar falls. So I think if anything less than the Rose Bowl at this point is going to be a little bit of a letdown, certainly the Alamo be a letdown, but at least it would be interesting against, because it's probably going to be against Texas and your old ball coach there.
Both of your old ball coaches, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this could be super interesting. I think we're going to be following it, and we'll be back on our next week talking about the bowl matchup. Another thing we got to talk about, the UW marketing department is on pedal to the metal on the Penix for Heisman campaign. And he's not getting a lot of national love.
Yeah. I mean, I think UW has made mistakes in the past when they haven't promoted their own guys very well. They kind of threw out a campaign for Jake Locker when he came back for his senior year. What was that, 2010? Mm-hmm. And it was like, it became clear pretty quickly, like that wasn't going to happen. Right. But in the past, you know, then you've had a guy like Jake Browning who kind of got into the race and probably was pretty close to being a finalist. And then, you know, but they didn't really do much of a campaign for him at all. And, you know, you've only had one player in your history, Steve Entman, actually be the finalist. So I think I give UW credit for trying to make it happen. But at the same time, Caleb Williams is having a monster season for SC, a team that's going to make the playoff, a team that's going to win their conference. And he's got, what, 10 more touchdowns than Penix does at this point? Something like, it's like 8 or 10 more. The statistics, I think, definitely, you know, you put him head-to-head with Caleb Williams, who's kind of the front runner right now. It's tough to make an argument for Penix other than just passing yards. So UW's in a tough spot, but I give him credit for trying to promote their guy and not just, you know, going down without a fight, essentially.
I think that most people are trying to make the case that he should be invited, not necessarily, you know, why he should win, that, you know, he's worthy of a seat in the row and of the, you know, the accolades that kind of come with that. You know, there's, I think, one set of theory or one complaint is that UW too little too late. I love the videos that they're putting out. I think the content is actually really strong. Just a question of, hey, you know, is it too late at this point? Should they have started a little earlier? And then the other, like the Pac-12 is obviously significantly behind Caleb Williams, probably because they think this is their best shot. But then, you know, should they be doing this for an outgoing program who isn't even going to be in the conference in a year and a half is the other target. I don't blame them for, you know, putting all of their chips behind the front runner.
Yeah, no, the dynamics are very interesting. I think what you said was the right analysis, which is Caleb Williams is the front runner. He's the most likely to win this thing. And so I think if you're the conference, you know, that makes put your best foot forward, right? And I do think, you know, you look at the numbers side by side and also what USC has done versus what Washington has done. You know, I think you have to give Caleb Williams a long look, and he's probably the front runner for a reason. Penix, I do think deserves a chance to be there. I'm more actually irritated that he wasn't included for the, what was it, the Davey O'Brien?
Yeah.
Yep. Or is it the Maxwell Award? Which one is it? But the quarterbacks, he wasn't even a finalist for that. It was Stroud and Williams and the Tennessee quarterback, Hooker. Mm-hmm. And I think Penix kind of was should be recognized in those types of awards as well. So hopefully he'll get some love. I'd like to see him, you know, make some All-American teams. I mean, I'd like to see him recognized for what he's done this season, which has been completely lights out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and put himself up, I think, in the conversation for a, you know, top Husky quarterback season ever. I think you mentioned it, but, you know, most people wouldn't be able to guess this. The second highest finisher of a Washington Husky in Heisman voting.
With Browning?
Browning, sixth.
Yeah, I mean, Entman, I believe, was either second or third.
Who's four?
Okay, so he's four. And, I mean, Browning had a monster season in 2016. And, you know, UW kind of, because of their soft non-conference schedule, remember the cupcakes and all that, kind of didn't really get going. And then they lost to SC in that big kind of
marquee game. Yeah.
Yeah. That big marquee game. And that would have been a chance for him. But you know, he ended up having a monster season that year. John Ross ended up having a monster season, was All American. And you know, Browning, I mean, I think the hate kind of went too far. That guy was a Husky warrior and a Husky legend.
I'll always be a Browning apologist for what he did, what the record I think stands for itself, and what that era was, and that he was at the helm during all those years. I'll always be an apologist for it. Look, this has been a great season. Neither of us predicted this.
Right.
You're not going to find anyone in the media who did. Where does this rank in terms of the greats of the Husky seasons of the 21st century? Where'd you stack this up?
21st century. That definitely narrows the field. I think the 2000 season, I think the fact that we won the Pac-10, won the Rose Bowl, finished third in the country, there's a lot of similarities with that season. There were a lot of close games that we kind of pulled out at the end. The cardiac kids, they were called. You had the Marcus Tuiasosopo was the fearless leader at quarterback. I think those two, I'd probably put, side by side. I'd say I'd give the edge to 2000. But I don't think you're eclipsing 2016. I think the 2016 team was probably the most prolific and accomplished and best team that we put together in the 21st century. So overall, I put this season, right up there with some of the Chris Peterson's best seasons. I would say winning the conference does distinguish, that 2016 team and that 2018. Yeah. I mean, even though this team, I think, might be better than that 2018 team, at least certainly would give them a game. I think you got to put all three of those Pac-12 champion seasons ahead of this one, but I think this one's right there.
I think 2001 and 2016 are 1A and 1B. You can call one gold, silver. I'm not going to argue with you. The question for me is this ahead of 2018? And it really was. I mean, it was a special season. Conference championships do matter. You remember they were 10-3. Tough loss at Auburn to get started. Really hard losses overtime at Oregon. And then that Cal loss where they took out Browning, et cetera. So, like, the heartbreak of that season was harder than this. The elation of this season. Is much greater because of what we're coming out of. But also remember that Apple Cup that year, taking out number 8 Wazoo 28-15 in the Snow Bowl, Pac-12 championship, that crazy low-scoring 10-3 finish against number 17 Utah.
The Byron Murphy pick six.
Yeah, I mean, that was just crazy. Like,
That was a really – I think we're going to look back at that era and just think, man, I mean, we had it really well. We had it really good. We were kings of the North. And BT – even though the North Division doesn't exist, I tweeted about this week. If the North Division existed still this year, Huskies would have won or tied for the lead in 5 of the last 7 years of the North because of what they did this year. So, but that era, we were a force to be reckoned with. And I don't know that we're quite there yet, but this season was more fun because it just came out of nowhere and we exceeded expectations so much.
100%. And the hope being, I think, look, you had a small blip with a really tough full year with Jimmy. And that I think overall, if you can kind of parlay this into another couple of great seasons, you've got a great era. You've got a 2016 and on great era. So yeah, I would agree with you. I think is it third or is it the fourth best? It's right there.
It's right.
Coaching carousel. So it is on full speed in the Pac-12. David Shaw with a surprise, I think, for most people, right? Comes out after big game and says, I'm done. I've coached my last game. And that's the highest paid coach in the Pac-12. Done.
Yeah. So Arizona State obviously filling their vacancy with Kenny Dillingham, just 32 years old, offensive coordinator, Oregon. I mean, I watched some of his welcome. I mean, he doesn't exude charisma. I'll just say that. I mean, he may be a great recruiter. He's definitely young, got the energy. Good luck, ASU. It just, to me, I was like, all right, whatever. I guess you're ASU. I can't understand you. And then Colorado's got an opening still. Mm-hmm. Apparently has offered the job to Deion Sanders, who's also weighing two other Power 5 offers, BT, including, mm-hmm. what was it, USF and Cincinnati, mm-hmm. so the Power 5 to B. But I think the Shaw announcement was the one that really, whoa, that came a little bit out of left field. I think if we could have sat there and said, okay, who's the next coach to logically kind of leave and get fired or be out of here? Sean Wilcox would kind of be right up there, but Wilcox just got an extension. And I think Shaw, so I did some digging. I went back into Shaw's career a little bit. I mean, we forget he inherited a team that had just gone to the Orange Bowl, Andrew Luck's Stanford team under Jim Harbaugh, right? But then he took the team to three Rose Bowls in the next four seasons. And I mean, they were dominant in the Pac-12. He took them to another, I think it was a Fiesta Bowl in there too. I mean, the peak that he brought Stanford to is arguably higher and better than any, than the peaks that have been achieved by most of the programs of the Pac-12, including ours, I would say. I mean, they didn't kind of get into the national championship discussion, but I mean, man, they were right there. And when we beat them in 2016, it was such a huge deal because of where they had been and what they had done. And so I think, you know, we ripped on him quite a bit, and he had our number at times. But, you know, the Huskies were 5-6 against Shaw in his 11 years. It wasn't that one-sided when it comes down to it. So, you know, I think Stanford's got a really tough job to fill that spot. It's going to be, you know, with the transfer portal, with NIL, Stanford's just not – I mean, NIL, I'm not going to speak to it because I don't really know what Stanford's MO is there, but definitely with the transfer portal, I mean, they have been hemorrhaging players out of the transfer portal. And so I think that's going to be a really challenging role or job for whoever takes over for Shaw.
Yeah, it's interesting. So the Vegas odds have Coach Pete as the number one.
I mean, if Peterson was going to go back into coaching, I think he would look at it. But I also think you hear him talk now and you hear him give interviews now. That's not a guy who's like biding his time on the sidelines waiting for an opportunity. I think he literally wants to live his life and not live the life of a football coach. Right. I personally think that's what he wants. That's going to be interesting. If Peterson does end up there, I think they're going to be dangerous. But I hope it doesn't happen.
You can see the formula, though, for someone who says, look, don't worry about the transfer portal stuff. There's nothing you can do anyway. So you don't even have to play the game. You're going to lose a lot of people. And that's where I think Coach Pete had the problem with, where he's like, look, this is just ridiculous. I need loyalty in. Like, I'll get you in. I need loyalty and I get you to stay. And with Stanford, like, you're going to get folks in. The loyalty in getting them to stay, I think, has interestingly been proven difficult. I would think you'd lose less where people – what you're losing from the degree – is so much, you know, but at the end of the day, if they're not getting the right play time, they see the program going down and they're not getting enough national exposure. You know, you see their leading running back is now the leading running back for USC, right? A year later. So that kind of stuff happens. And then the NIL stuff, boy, no lack of rich alums down there. Do they care about football? Yeah, I don't know. But there's no lack of money.
I mean, Phil Knight's given more money to Stanford than he has to Oregon. He's just given it to the business school.
He's given it to the business
school. Not the football program.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that I think is the problem. Like, you can go down Sand Hill Road there to the VCs and just, you know, wave a 10 cup around. But, you know, do they care? You have to get a coach who gets, you know, who actually cares about going out and doing that. But an interesting one.
Can you imagine Chris Peterson going to Silicon Valley and like trying to fundraise or, I mean, it just, to me, that is like impossible to imagine. I'm not saying it's like a 0% chance, but like, to me, I cannot imagine that.
No, because you know why? I will tell you, your other fearless co-host and I, Mitch, toured Coach Pete around our tech lab at Microsoft. And I've never seen someone so fish out of water. He was just like, I don't know. I got my flip phone, man. I don't know about this stuff. You know, we're talking about like augmented reality for training and things. And he's super, oh, this is so cool. But like, he is not into tech. That's not his thing. And he's also like the Stanford VC money community to him, I don't think is his shtick.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see it happening. But at the same time, look, it's a different kind of job. And I think if you don't want to go to the SC with the expectations that they have or some of the other jobs like that, or, you know, then, you know, like, I think one of the things he liked about coming here versus Boise was that he talked about it. He could go out to dinner with his family and people wouldn't bug him.
Yeah.
And you're definitely going to get that in Palo Alto. Nobody's going to bug you. You know?
Yeah. You're also going to spend, you know, $8 million on a house. So,
that's right. Yeah.
So, you know what? I mean, if he was going to get back into coaching, I could see it like one of a couple of things. I could see Stanford. I think that would be appealing to him because of the reasons we're talking about. You don't need to sit there and worry about, you know, the day-to-day of the transfer portal and all that stuff. I mean, it's just, he's not caught up in the, like, the new money aspects of college football at Stanford. He's not going to have pressure from the AD, from the president. I mean, it's going to be a different world, right? I could also see him doing something like going to UC Davis and being like, I'm going to be the coach at UC Davis because I don't want to be on TV. I don't want to do, you know, I just want to have fun with kids and help kids. And, you know, so I could see him doing that. But overall, like I said, I do not think he's going to get back into coaching. I think he would rather be a dad and a husband and a person and not be a football coach 24/7, 365.
Pop on Fox and cash a paycheck, right? And
exactly.
A lot of the things he does now is go out and get a corporate check for doing leadership conferences.
Yeah.
You know, business school professor, emeritus and for 2 years at Washington and that kind of thing. So he's really good at is out talking leadership and things of that nature. But let's wrap this thing up. What a great Apple Cup win. I mean, it truly was, from a game perspective, one for the ages, because I think so much was riding on it. And particularly because of what happened last season to get that Apple Cup trophy back. And the way in which they did it was incredible to finish the season 10-2, you know, and now I think we're just kind of leaving it up to, unfortunately, with these new rules, not playing for the Pac-12 championship. And so it's out of our hands. We're going to have to see how the SC and Utah game plays out on Friday and where we end up. And we'll be back to talk about what that bowl game is, who our opponent's going to be, and dive deep into them. And whether it's Texas, Penn State, Ohio State, like Purdue, we don't know. But we're going to dive deep into them and get you prep for that bowl game. But what a great season. Husky Nation, if you're out there listening, you know, fans and players, amazing. So proud of it. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Aquí estamos, aquí nos quedamos y aquí ganamos. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.